Greetings, friends, and welcome to another episode of the GrogPod Roguelike Podcast, wherein each episode we smash the oppressive media landscape of obscure indie games, slap some number on them, and revisit them at the end of the year in our Omega Bowl. I am your mad regent host of the podcast, Scott Berger, and with me are my dusty, oppressed co-hosts lingering in the shadows.
This is your chimney sweep. This is Will Rott here.
And, of course, I am your very own diesel punk, Dick Van Dyke, Andrew Harshman.
And I'm calling in. I can cast the pod now.
Well, is it St. Swithin's Day already? We're talking, as you may have guessed, the game Rainbreaker this week. Released March 18th, 2025. A hot and fresh 35 days ago as of this recording. You can find this on all of the platforms as long as they are PC and Steam, I believe. And this game was, I guess emphasis on the was, developed by one Studio Fizbin out of Ludwigsburg and Berlin, Germany. Previous developers of the 2013 game The Inner World. 2021 with three games of Say No More, Minute of Islands, and Lost at Sea. And their sadly last game, 2025's Rainbreaker. This was published by Thunderful Publishing, who have put out some other notable entries like Viewfinder, SteamWorld Heist 2, Planet of Lana, one that I've had my eye on for a while called Laika Aged Through Blood, which you are a dog riding a motorcycle and killing people with. A rogue game, Cursed to Golf, that looks kind of interesting if you ever wanted to get your golf on with this podcast. How long is this game? Well, your average player of Rainbreaker has just under 4 hours of gameplay in it, which maybe we'll get to in a minute.
Wait, be fair, it's only been out for 35 days.
True. And
a mere 10 minutes a day, and yeah. You too could break rains.
And Rainbreaker rolls in on our popularity chart at the number 1,494th most popular roguelike game on Steam with a whopping total of 260 reviews, which almost was a new obscurity record for the podcast. I actually had to go back and double check the rankings, where Pineapple Smash Crew still is slightly more obscure, and also previous episode Azure Dreams doesn't even rank on the Steam rankings at all. But even if it did, yeah, I did a whole bit in it. Anyway, crawling out of the shadows of obscurity. Andrew, you have one sentence to describe what one does in Rainbreaker before you are dragged away by grimy children of the streets.
Well, Rainbreaker is a top-down action beat-em-up set in a diesel punk dystopia, which is ruled over by a horrific ruler whose reign must be broken at all costs. And you take up the role of Cleft, a righteous and very three-dimensional action heroine who has defected from the their messages being exchanged, who has defected from the Queen's army to take her down once for all using her trusty lance of choice.
It's a javelin.
It's a javelin.
It is a lance, but she calls it a javelin erroneously.
Right. Did I misspeak? Did I say top? Did I say up down? Did I say
top down? But it is, I believe, isometric is the term for
that. It's the same
what?
Thing.
What? Oh, come on.
If
give
you're
me
looking, y'all are if you're looking which two dimensions it's looking at, it's the X and Y dimension and not the Z dimension.
Does anyone call Hades an isometric game?
I believe everyone does.
Unless you're like specifically having a conversation about
About Diablo, you talk about Hades.
But like, I think Diablo is, I mean, expressly has a map and was like one of the first like good isometric game. Anyway, and of course, you know, what makes this game a roguelike? Well, there is permadeath. It's run based. The maps are generated, are assembled in a random fashion, Although you do have the opportunity to like play through the same map, but like periodically the map is refreshed and that's done randomly. And some of the voice acting feels a little random. No, I thought the voice acting was fine and dandy.
Adequate.
Well, maybe to pull the brakes on this train to start with, I think we have to put a the classic Grog Pod enjoyment warning header right at the top here of it's okay to like a game or not. And the all devs, I think, especially in this case, go to heaven aspect, but I think maybe
especially
some
these valiant devs who died on the hill defending their vision and clearly being in the most unfortunate position of having to push out a game that is like clearly not what they had in mind. Like this game is, it's like the amount of content is clearly far less than they originally had anticipated. Yes, it is all right to like or dislike a game. I like this game quite a bit, and I like it a lot better. Certain elements of it, I should say, a lot better than the game that it is most compared to, which of course is Hades. But I brought up the voice acting right at the gate because my co-hosts kept blabbing about the accents. They've never heard these guys. The rest of the Grog Pod has never played a game with British accents before. And that apparently was the most remarkable part over the last couple of weeks in our Discord.
Hades had, what's his face, had a British accent.
I don't care about the accents. I care about the intonation.
Yeah, so it's not that particular accent. I think you're talking, it's like the specific region, I think, where it's just like a very over-emphasized, feels like, form of the accent.
Now, Will, It's always very easy for us to criticize the world of game development, game production. I think as the only person here who is actively working on a game, I think that the rest of us are kind of less qualified maybe to pass judgment. But
no, nope.
I'm Will, I'm gonna give you a test. All right, you've stepped on some kind of spike trap, and I'm gonna need you to provide me a voice sample right now of like. What is that sound of you getting like impaled by spikes? What does that sound like? Give me a sound here.
No.
All right, give me another sound. Give me another sound, but like less.
That was a joke. It's not actually that. But
Will would just AI to do it for him.
Boy,
perfect.
Yeah, you've just stepped in a bear trap.
Ouch, governor.
All right, now do it as if you were reading off of a script.
Yeah, here's the thing is I would actually probably step in a bear trap to get it just right. That's how dedicated I am. So,
ouch, governor.
I might have been listening to too much music and too many podcasts while playing this game because I do not get what you're trying to get at, Scott. What's the problem with the pain sound effects?
So I think what I'm trying to get at is, and again, it's okay to have differing opinions. When Andrew, you selected this game, which I was like, oh, interesting. Like I had like never heard of this game before, emphasizing its kind of obscurity. And so I was interested to just kind of like check out the Steam page, maybe like peruse some of the reviews. What are some people kind of saying about it? And people were kind of like dunking on the voice acting immediately. I'm like, yeah, but everybody does that for like any game that has voice acting, right? I'll hear it for myself. And boo, I feel like maybe this genre is too blessed overall with pretty good voice acting, because it felt like almost immediate that like, yeah, I mean, like the main character that you play as is fine. But I think one of the characters that you first meet when
the spear sister,
Ardra, I think her name is.
Wait, just Ardra? Like from the TNG episode with the, okay, sorry. No, I never mind. Go ahead.
Yeah, not TNG, not Slay the Spire. There's your free bingo space for the episode.
No, we'll get it in there for real. Don't worry.
Yeah, her, and I'm sure that like all of the voice actors for this game are well qualified to do this. I don't know if it's the direction, I don't know if it's the script, but it just sounded like they were just reading off of. I'm looking around my desk here for anything that has like text on it that I could possibly read. Maybe not this, maybe not my performance reviews from my previous job. But like, it feels like there's something something. It feels very wooden and like stiff. Where, oh, I've got, what am I doing? I've got some screenshots queued up here that I could be like, oh, like, all right. So this is your first interaction with, oh, Ardea, the Spear Sister, who you come up to one of these, I don't know, camera towers, question mark. And the text is says, by my spear, if it isn't you, Clef, a most unwelcome surprise. But the way that it's like delivered feels like, by my spear, if it isn't you, Clef, a most unwelcome surprise. Then Clef responds with, is that you, Ardea? I should have known. Still serving the queen like a slavering dog, I see. You should have never come here, Clef. You betrayed us. You betrayed your oath. Against a tyrant, it's resistance. Resistance is just a petty word for treason. It feels like, am I wrong? Like, I felt like I was just like getting talked at.
Yeah.
Was this anyone else's?
Absolutely. Experience? I mean, if you want to make this podcast about trashing on the game, I'm going to jump on that right away. And I think, here's a good place to start, because that's your first interaction, right? And it extends throughout. That's the thing. It's like, yes, that character sucks. And then the next character with the fucking beak nose, the fucking medieval like plague doctor style, like that also sucked.
Well, don't forget about the chimney sweeps that you fight. But not to be differentiated from chimney sweep that's your friend.
Oh, right. Exactly. Are you talking?
The vandals.
The vandals. Yeah, no, it's none of it strikes me as very good. Especially when the problem is we have Hades in mind, I think, the standard. Where, yes, in fact, it is probably above standard by a significant margin, and this game is just below standard. And so the delta is so huge.
You say that, but it's interesting because I was deep diving the troves of the internet. And like, I think from our Americanized experience, from our Yankee Doodle Dandy accent edge of the spectrum, like the voice actor doing the fake British accent as Zagreus, like, comes off as believable to our uncultured ears. But it sounded like people from like the British Isles and Australia had a lot of beef with it. Like, oh, this is just clearly a terrible accent. So I feel like
read on Zagreus was always that he was doing like a faux, like, well, we don't know what the Greeks actually sounded like. Sure. So I'm going to do kind of this, you know, classics informed, like, oh, kind of British, but not quite. Okay. So Scott, you're reading off the script, which is great. You're like, let's do an impersonation of the voice acting to get across what the voice acting is like. And you say, am I wrong here? Like, well, I got to tell you, I don't remember, because I actually like gave this game a chance and I played it for 12 hours and I don't remember what they sounded like at the very beginning. But my I don't know, general recollection is that that character doesn't sound so bad. I would be interested to know, though, as you say, Scott, what the cultural and language background of the voice actors in this game is, because I don't know if they're British. You said that the developers are from Europe. So
they're from Germany, I believe. Maybe if I remember right, the voice acting like studio that was contracted out for this game, I think was based in Germany or something. But like, it's weird because like
I don't think it's a problem with the accent. I think the accent's fine. I think it's the problem with how they're saying the lines.
Right. Yeah.
It's like when she does the things, she beats the little locked room things, and she gets to cross the bridge. She's literally like, I can cross the bridge now. It's like such a weird tonal shift that it takes me out. It like jars me every single time. And she says it once or twice per
incessantly
per run.
Incessantly. That's something that stood out to me. I just played for an hour. And
it's like, well,
if you're good at the game, assumption, you know, you're not going to hear that very often. I don't know why that one line is repeated so many times.
I get the feeling that this was a bunch of people were given lines to read, and then they smashed them together in post, and they did not get any directorial direction for how to say these lines. And so it's just like, I am given this line in a vacuum, and right, I say it, and then the developers are like, those are the words, and there we go, we're done. We've recorded a voice.
Yeah, and I feel like I feel like we're jumping in and just like dunking on the game immediately. I think there's a lot to like with this game if it just had more time and budget.
Sure.
And no. I think that like
it feels unfinished.
Yeah, and I feel like if this game like launched 35 days ago and had a big fat early access sticker on it, I'd be willing to give it a lot more leeway. But like it's sadly unfortunate that like the game is kind of DOA that like I had mentioned it earlier that like this was the final game. The game studio put out a post on the Steam discussion forums for Rainbreaker saying, "Hey community, as you may have seen, our studio recently announced that we are unfortunately forced to wind down operations after releasing Rainbreaker. We received a few questions about what this will mean for the future of the game. First of all, we are committed to supporting Rainbreaker post-launch. Our full team will be spending the weeks after launch fixing any remaining bugs and small balance changes. The game has been our passion project for over 2.5 years, so we want to make sure our players have the best possible time with it." It goes on, but it basically just kind of says that like they're just going to be doing like bug fixes and like minor balance tweaks. And it sucks because like I feel like there's like a cool like vibe and like punk take here that like it's just like it's not fully realized, and I don't think ever will be.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Her constantly saying I can raise the bridge now could be easily resolved with an update. To give my informed opinion on the voice acting example that was given, I think it's fine. I don't know what you guys are getting all bent out of shape about. Like, I think it very much is a matter of voice acting has been so good for so long, and when something doesn't quite reach the pinnacle of what we expect,
then it should just be text.
It's the bar's been set too high, I think. I think you're right, Scott.
This is weird to me. It's for someone, I guess maybe you put music and like I think of sound is like one category, but obviously there's voice acting and then there's the music, and you guys are usually losing your mind about the music. And
I will say, I think the music in this game is really good.
You are insane. Well, it sounds like a goblin singing. Are you kidding me? Like, listen, it's like
I think it's great. It's not the kind of music that I would actively seek out and listen to just like at the reg, but like I think like it absolutely nails like what they're trying to go for this game. And I was going and listening to like some of the other music put out by scrolling Deserve, DJERV, which I think translates from Norwegian to daring. Like Norwegian like hard rock band, like the stuff that like the other stuff that they have on YouTube, like I'm like, yeah, why was not more of this in the game? Like there's only one battle track, which again, budget, but
yeah, like, that's unfortunate.
But like I put on like some of their music just in the background, and I was like, yeah, okay, this feels great, and like I just wish there was more of it. And it just kind of stinks that like we get like a like this would be an excellent demo for this game, but like as a fully finished like released product, it's just like I don't know. It's the problems of running out of budget and that kind of game industry stuff.
Yeah, it's good that we're reiterating that. I have a pretty short list here, but this is. Even though the game is clearly, it's kind of rushed out due to some weird development situation, publishing situation. It's really lousy that the that the development team was fired like before the game was even out. Despite being unfinished, this is a very bold game. It has a bold aesthetic. And it is also bold that the game has 8 save files. There are 8 available save profiles. Unnecessary, folks. It's very bold that the game has a main menu theme song. And it's bold that this theme song has vocals. Like, you're taking a real chance. Like, God, we hope the player base likes this, the way this person's singing. We hope they like this style of music. It's like, I feel that's, you got to be a little more restrained with the main menu.
No, I like it. Maybe it's just because I think the song's fine or decent. But I think that this game, its strongest point is that it has a very strong aesthetic that it sticks to in all aspects. It stick with the music, the voice acting is whatever, but it is like they've got the like punk vibe and they stick to it at all points of the game. And I think that's its like strongest selling point, is that, you know, it has that, it doesn't have the same vibe as Hades, even if it plays similar to Hades.
Yeah, definitely, definitely different vibe. What is that vibe? How would we characterize this vibe? I wanted to say steampunk at first, but that has such like a negative connotation that I'm like, no, it's diesel punk.
It's steampunk rock.
Medieval punk.
The setting of this world is it's very medieval.
Gothic punk.
Goth punk type situation. You're playing through this like kind of, you know, this sprawling cyberscape with lots of cables running everywhere.
And bells,
the fusion
and keys
of sci-fi and keys and chrome and bells and anvils sometimes. We were making a lot of chimney sweep references earlier. There are literal enemies that are literally chimneys later in the game, which is delightful. And so you're traveling across this, this sprawling diesel punk space, which is in the process of being, revolted against, and the people are rising up. And so there's also this punk graffiti aesthetic where there is, literal graffiti, like, all over the place, graffiti expressed in the loading symbols and in the UI. And then also you have the fusion, the further fusion of like old timey medieval text artwork, like you see in a lot of memes. And the like monastery texts, which are used as, to great effect, specifically in the power up artwork, and also the boss fight intros. It's like there's a real great foundation here, and it feels like they pretty much finished kind of like the engine and all the core systems, but then there was sadly no opportunity to really build that all out and build on top of that foundation to make something more fully fledged and involved.
Yeah. And I feel like there's like an uncapitalized aspect of like the punk vibe, where it feels like our main character Clef is like, she seems like Disney punk, like the nice older sister, instead of like I wanted this character arc of, and again, budget, but I can imagine some kind of character arc where like you're starting out as like, no, I don't need any friends, I can do it all myself kind of thing. And putting like,
how is that not also Disney though?
Well, like I'm looking for like putting the cigarette butt out on your tongue, like, like mean to your friends kind of thing. And then you're just like, oh, actually I do need my friends. And like, being able to like, I don't know, like have something, some kind of character arc. Like the vibe that I get from the player character is that and again, maybe underscored by like the chipperness of like the delivery of the lines. Like I don't know if the director was just like, yeah, just say, I don't know, like Cockney accent, go. And then they're just like, well, what's my character's motivation? Like, how punk is this? Because, like, you step on some spikes and you go, ouch, versus, like, guttural growls. Like, the art for the main player character, I think, is really good, because you're, like, this, like, mean, this mean-looking muscle mommy who's about to just, like, tear shit up. And I'm like, yes, I'm on board, sign me up. And then, like, I don't know, just, it feels so flat. Like, it doesn't feel like it comes out of the gate with, like, punching you in the face with, like, a spiked bracelet and, like, neon mohawk mode.
Right. This is definitely like what drew me into the game. I was actually being served ads for this game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. On, I think it was Instagram or Facebook perhaps. And not just like once, like multiple times. And it definitely caught my eye. I was like, oh, perhaps this is the Hades experience that I was really looking for. And it's not quite, unfortunately. But yeah, character design, very strong. You've got Clef, who I think I said Cleft previously.
Yeah, I noticed
me.
That. Big mistake.
Clef, rather, very, very memorable character, since I could remember her name, which is short for like Clefandra or something.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, point, she says it at some point.
Queen calls it out.
Clefandra? Clefandra? Anyway.
Clefiana.
Clefiana. Yeah. So she's wearing like part of her old like soldier attire. She has one big old muscly arm exposed, some spikes coming out of her shoulder, this cool white haircut, which is not a shock of white hair, all white hair. And
a little bit shaved on the side.
Cool weapon design. Yeah, of course. And yeah, which is, you know, a spear or javelin, or perhaps it's a lance.
It's a lance.
But I saw Will is not about our resident muscle man does not like the looks of this muscle mommy, it would seem.
Well, I didn't say that, but yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, so this is who she is. She's V from Arcane. She's, I mean, like this is it, or you know, it's basically. I mean, you said the word muscle mommy. I had that in my notes as well. That is the term I think you have for this sort of a person.
Well,
that's not like
she's not a muscle mommy. She's a muscle big sister.
Fun
which is also
to that.
V from Arcane, who is a literal big sister.
Well,
in
also
that show.
Like. a tangential connection to that, the Jerv who did the title theme for this also did a single called Get Jinxed One Arcane.
Yeah, I know that song.
Well, in
so
any case,
anyway, you were saying.
What a crossover. Yeah.
Because Hades is the I think the great point of contrast here, given the similar genre here, I think when we think about the motivation and the character of Zagreus, it's obvious. It's like oh, you are an angsty teen who hates his overbearing dad, and you're trying to escape. And oh yeah, there's this other stuff where it's like, oh yeah, you got this hell at dynamic Olympus, and like these are things that like we already have a structure in our brains for those of us who have been exposed to this sort of mythology of like what's going on here and like what the it's very immediately obvious what the dynamics in play are. Whereas with this character, this Clef. It's we're learning. I'm glad you're showing and not telling, or I mean, you're kind of doing a little both maybe, but like we're learning that you used to be a soldier. You're now rebelling against it. But like, what's the motivation? Why do you want to do that? Like, I'm sure you'll tell us eventually, but we have no structure in our mind which explains this whole thing other than like, oh, you had a change of heart about this person you were serving. And now because now you think they're a tyrant, but like I'm like 2 hours into the game, so what the fuck do I know? But like, it seems like with the Hades, you know right away what's going on. Whereas this game, this character, I have no idea, and sort of person you don't see in reality, and not very often, I should say. Like this, it's something that's completely
the one who
unrelated.
Rebels against the tyrant. I feel like it's not in reality, maybe but it's absolutely a trope.
It is.
There aren't very many dystopian cyber hells that we fight on a daily basis. They're more mundane cyber hells.
One of the reviews I saw for this game was something to the effect of, here we go again. Another game bringing politics into video games. It's like, this is... You should come on, like, give me a break. Like, just because the main character is like a woman with an asymmetrical haircut, doesn't mean it's like trying
muscles,
to
think,
brainwash you and your kids or something. Like this is it's the anti-authoritarian themes are a little bit on the nose, but like I don't know, I like it quite a bit.
And it was
one of the things that drew me to the game. I hear what you're saying, Will, and I can almost guarantee that there were probably grand plans for some flashback sequences and things to explain like what the inciting incident was.
It needs an intro.
I rarely am
like a pro intro kind of person, but this game needs a 30-second intro cinematic.
You know,
you're absolutely right.
I was
where you
about
go
this
out
earlier.
On a mission for the queen, and something happens, and the little orphan girl
you have to kill a child.
Like, there, it felt like there was a missed opportunity. We're like, okay, so like we're
kill a dog, maybe.
Like, we're 30 minutes in, so I think like the when you first start a run in this game, and your story, I'll put story in air quotes, begins. You are you know, you're in media res. You're very like Hades style, like you're on the adventure. Like, okay, I'm ready to go get an audience with the queen. You run around and, you know, obviously you're underleveled, so you get bludgeoned to death pretty quick. But like, I feel like there was this kind of aspect that you could have like built up, like, okay, the run is starting, like you're out there, you're getting ready to like smash society or like this oppressive society down. And like when you get defeated for the first time, I feel like, bam, that's when you should play like the intro music segment. Like there's a great, there's a, like a great kind of like tight or a lyrical music video that Nerve put up on their YouTube page. That's like, yes, like that would be perfect to just like insert after your first defeat of like, you know, really like get your blood boiling of like, oh, I'm going to go back in and just like beat these jerks up kind of deal. And what Hades does, like, you know, the gold standard here, you fail that first run, you're reset back to your, you know, main, let's call it a main town. And you have like your story interaction elements unfold of like, here's your character's motivation. Here's like the whole story unlaid in front of you. And I think that like, yeah, the Greek mythos stuff is like obvious to our Western upbringings, but like, you know, like punk vibes also, I feel like are all, you know, pretty well trodden tropes these days that, you know, you like you come to some like, you know, gritty resistance camp. Like we saw this in Remnant, kind of like this, you know, people that are like fighting against the odds. But like you come to this, I don't know, like regular looking camp. And there's, you know, some very nice Welsh lady there who's also super, super buff, who's like, oi, I can't believe you're back already, Clef.
Oh, boy.
I'm trying to make the accent as bad as I can here, but like it's just, you know, like but there's like nothing said, like there's no like thrust, there's no like character motivation of like, it's just like, oh, you're back, go get out there and smash them. Like to what end? Like, is that helping everybody out? And again, budget, but right. Like I was looking up how many people do we think were involved in the production of this game?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Four?
Nine.
Oh, 10.
What if I told you it was like at least 50 plus people?
What?
I was expecting you to give a high number, which is why I wanted to juxtapose with a low, but like that is that's even beyond comedy. That's wow.
Now we've played,
I mean,
and we've played a lot of games that are made.
Okay,
by
wait, hold on though. How many people are involved in Hades? I don't really know.
That was my lead up.
I think it's 20, right?
That was my softball. Yeah, Hades is about half the size of the studio. Mm. So Supergiant Games, about 25-ish people.
Just got a fist bump from Will Wright over here. Well, I've watched the documentary because I was really into that. But
oh, yeah, I watched a tiny bit of it until they said that it was a dungeon crawler. And I was like, nope, sorry, wrong. Incorrect, game developers.
Literally
now, Rainbreaker, on the other hand, might technically be a dungeon crawler, barely. Wow, that is quite shocking to hear that 50 people, you say.
Yeah, and that's not including like the army of like QA testers and like all the publishing credits. That's like the credited people from like this game. Like Rainbreaker had a game director, an executive producer, and a regular producer on it. Like that, I feel like, is where I'm directing my criticism here. Like not necessarily like the voice actors or
so
like,
there's definitely someone directing those voice actors then.
You would think, I mean, like, unless like, you know, the person just happened to be like thrust into the game director role at like the last second and was just like, all right, go direct the game. And they're just like, you know, it, I mean, from my vantage point here with the cursory amount of research that I've done, hard to tell, but I mean, like there's a number of games that we've played made by a single person that I think have obviously a more limited budget, but I think a more realistic scope to reach for. It feels very hard to like design a game that's so very clearly linked and inspired by, you know, the one and only Hades, which maybe we can expand on with like other games trying to, you know, coattail ride the popularity of others. With like Survivor likes or Spire likes or even Balatro likes are becoming a thing now. But like, if you kind of like just design your game to just be so clearly a Hades I'll say it, derivative in this case. Like you're really just kind of setting yourself up to get baseball batted over the head with like, well, like why would I play this when Hades exists kind of deal.
Are there any successful Hades likes? Like commercially successful, I guess.
Actually, let me spoil ahead and look. I think so. Yes. I think that like there are some games that are commercially successful. I don't know if they would really jive with our tastes per se, but I did play a little bit of the game. It's a very like Chinese myth. It's like Hades, but Chinese mythology, called Warm Snow. That's like
yes.
fairly like popular, fairly well regarded. I don't know. It didn't really grab me at the time, but like at PAX last year, Andrew, I don't know if you remember, they had this huge setup for this one very clearly Hades-like game called Echoes of Mistralia. It was the one with the guy who had like they hired a lute player that was like dancing around in front of the stage, but
wow.
But like I sat down and like I studied that for a moment. I'm like, yeah, that looks like a Hades game, all right. But why would I play that when Hades exists? Like, it feels like you have to make some very bold reason why your game stands out, instead of like, you know, what was the joke that I had written down here of like, you know, I feel like the pitch for Hades-like games is like, well, if you like Hades for its top-notch voice acting, hundreds of hours of story content, wide diversity of weapons and novel gameplay systems, then you'll love our random Hades-like game because it looks similar? Question mark? Like, is that what they're going for? I don't know. It feels...
Well, no. There's a javelin they call a lance. That's a big differentiating factor, right? Ooh,
well, there are different types of lances. There are four classes of lance. And
you can use
and
two lances at the same time, kind of. They're almost...
Well, I never unlocked that. I never bothered what? Unlocking that one. I mean, I'm like, I don't want to. Forget that.
It's pretty useful, blurry. Actually, though.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah, well, I think perhaps we're getting back to a theme that we're revisiting a theme that came up in our Hades episode, where I approached Hades from a like from the perspective of being primarily interested in the raw gameplay, whereas most of you engage more wholeheartedly with the story and everything, and so, you know, different priorities, I suppose, will result in different outcomes in terms of our enjoyment of the game. I did want to mention really quickly regarding the development and the size of the development team. I did look at I did a little bit of research in the past week and checked out the developer's website, and they had some pretty like encouraging stuff posted up about their work environment, that they encouraged their they were, you know, very clear, like, hey, you know, there's not going to be a bunch of overtime, there's not going to be a bunch of crunch, we are aiming for a 32-hour work week, and so perhaps the reason there are so many employees is because you know, they're not expected to do ridiculous American developer type things. So perhaps part of the reason for the giant you know, seemingly from our American perspective, bloated staff size is a difference between American and Euro work culture. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem to have worked out, because the staff have been dismissed.
And that just proves that America is best. And everyone should be working 60-hour weeks.
Get that 996 going.
Crunch is victory. Only crunch.
Crunch to victory.
The theme of our video game podcast.
Yeah, we're
pro crunch.
Sweating, blood, sweat, and tears over here. Our families are just crying at home, wishing
well,
that we
you
would
just have to not have a family. That's the key.
Come visit. That is.
They can't cry if they don't exist.
This is why I've been instituting a minimum of 150 hours of gameplay for each host to have before doing each of these podcast episodes, because I am trying to like make sure that everyone is as oppressed as possible, and making sure that I the king of keys in this case, reigns supreme. And the only way to do that is to make sure that all my loyal Coho subjects are as oppressed as much.
Yeah, but Scott, I'm too busy doing overtime and work travel to play video games.
No, I really appreciate
Steam
that,
Deck,
actually.
Steam Deck.
Because I'm able to outsource all of my work to get my hourly requirements to a third world country and therefore still meet the requirements. This is the billionaire way, of course.
We should go back to talking about the game.
Yes. So
I mean,
we can talk about
we can rant against the billionaire class and how the workers need to unite for a while. That'd be fun. But
I guess now that we're all on a watch list. So we got javelins.
Differences between this game and Hades. I for one prefer the way that the game is rendered, I think, is superior to Hades. Instead of doing this weird slightly lower resolution rendering of the character, it's more cohesive to my eye, but I realize that's a pretty subjective thing. I appreciate what they've done with the integration of traps. I think it's a more engaging system.
So running around and hitting B on every trap to activate it was really fun for you?
Well, they expand upon that, is expounded on as the game goes on and is interesting. You have the ability to interact with these little control panels on the ground, listeners, where you can trigger the various traps. And there's like, I don't know, a half dozen of them. It's better than my experience than the experience I had in Hades, where it's like I would forget about the traps until they killed me. And then it would just be like a source of frustration.
The traps were useful for you could actually use them against the enemies in an effective way, which I thought was interesting.
Indeed, I thought that was admirable. It's like, well, because I definitely went into this game thing like, well, this is clearly a Hades clone, and it's like, and that did stick out to me, like, oh, this is something that's different. And personally, just to my personal taste, like the beat 'em up core mechanics in this game, you've got a couple of different attacks. They're all sort of useful in different situations. They're worth using. The core beat 'em up mechanics I prefer to Hades personally.
Wrong. No, that's
I mean, I'll say this, they are different, and it's interesting that, like, if this game just had more time in the oven, like being expanded on some of these ideas could be super interesting. So like you have your standard X button to punch, and like that punch, it like there's a lot of very interesting like interconnected systems where punch, like melee punching foes, like reduces the heat meter, where heat builds up because there's an engine running inside of your javelin thingy. But like you can like slam your javelin into the ground for like an AoE of effect. You can use your javelin as like maybe like a crappy gun with some aspects of it. And you can just like straight up throw it. So it's like you kind of have that twist on the Hades formula of like a ranged attack, like a medium ranged attack, and sort of like your close in melee stuff. But like as you use your javelin more and more, that builds up a heat meter and it eventually tops out. But I think you are incentivized to kind of like keep that under control by like dashing and punching and things like that. I felt like, you know, if this game just had like another 6 months, seems like there is maybe a mechanic that you could tie the heat system into where like you deliberately overload your javelin to get it hot, and then you use it as like a fire poker almost, and like do fire damage kind of a thing. But like, you know, instead when it overheats, Clef just says, you know, the javelin's overheated, I can't use it now.
That's not even true. That's the funny thing is like she'll say that, and then you keep throwing it.
Meter goes down a little bit.
You can keep throwing it, but it doesn't do the big thing. It doesn't do the special thing. It just does like whatever the base damage is. So it's much, much less effective until it cools down.
Yeah, and I found the heat system. What a bad term when you're making a game that is very similar to a extremely successful game called Hades, which also has a heat system. The overheating mechanic I found pretty aggravating at first. You get some upgrades though that kind of mitigate it. You also, you know, learn to not just rely on using the javelin. And another thing is that another thing that was aggravating me at first this game is that like you have to like execute and like finish off certain enemies.
Yes.
Oh yeah,
which
I
was
got
annoying
that note here
initially, but I found that after you started once you get, I don't know, an hour or two in, perhaps 3 hours, you start unlocking upgrades and things that are related to the executions. And I found that to be a pretty intriguing and cool way to mix up the combat.
I like...
You are trying to time when to do them because you get various buffs, and you can also use them to trigger other attacks and things like that. What's that called?
I like the execution mechanic. I think it takes too long to do it. Game slows down for too long. It feels like it needs to be like a quarter of a second.
If it was like the execution style from a Doom 2016 or Doom Eternal, where the execution actually had some like thing that tied into another gameplay system,
fast
and looked different most of the time. Then there are some perks that you can pick up, like, oh, you execute and it gives you like more, or like a health bonus, or like shoots like bleed effect, projectiles out, or like things like that. Like there were interesting hooks there, but it felt like an almost a necessary like speed bump to the early game, where like, oh, you have like these little like dancing bell enemies that like the only way that you can clear through this zone that you're in is you have to go through the execution animation for each one of them. It felt like,
yeah, you know, I agree that initially it's kind of annoying, but then I don't know, later you learn, and there's also some like meta progression upgrades that are related to it. It's like, oh, this is actually necessary and some points useful. Like in some of the boss fights, it's like, oh, cool, I can use the execution to like temporarily to get some iframes. Another neat idea, which again, you know, could have really bloomed if the game had been fully cooked.
I think maybe the problem is that your first couple runs, there's three enemy types, and one third of them are these weird bells and that you have to execute. So, like, I've gotten a couple runs now. Or a couple win runs, and slowly the run goes longer and there's more enemy variation. But boy, there's still not that much enemy variation. Like you're mostly fighting those bells and the little things.
Yeah, there's the single shooters, go to bat, and then there's the five shooters and the bells. So there's three enemy types.
You're forgetting, you both have been fidget spinning this whole time. There's the fidget spinner enemy that spins around and shoots daggers at you.
Oh, I did not forget about that one. Trust me, I didn't.
The first boss is then repurposed as like an enemy type. I mean, there's, I think y'all are not being, it's not totally accurate. The total amount of enemies is a little more than what we're discussing, but it's not quite enough.
I'm not denying that there are more enemies later in the game.
Sure, sure.
But it's a pretty,
in the early game.
Couple
especially.
Runs, you're like, you're fighting against the enemies and they're not very interesting to fight against. Like the bells with the execution animation, I don't find them to be, they're not really hard. They're not really fun. And like, I just didn't find the enemies to be fun to fight against. Like
I will go to bat for the bell for a moment. In so far as the sound design for fighting the bells is great. Cause of course, when you hit the bell, it makes a nice hearty bell ringing noise.
I mean, that is great.
Ringing the bell.
I will say the sound design for stuff like that in this game is very good. It feels like when you shoot one of your like your shotgun javelin and makes like a big like oomphy like pow sound, it feels good. Like it sounds like it's appropriate. Mm-hmm. Like I think the art design very good, the sound design very good. If it just had more time, you know, it could be a thing. But like I think what Colin's getting at here is variety. And the fact that there's only one biome kind of a death sentence for this game.
Right. Yeah, we haven't talked about that. Yep. It's a nice looking environment, but golly, there's an unfortunate point that you reach in playing this game when it dawns upon you like, oh, we're not going to see another level, are we? There's not going to be another tile set, is there?
What about the trial sizes? Like in terms of like, so in Hades, you enter a room and then there's like, you fight a certain number of enemies and then there'll be another reset and there'll be more and potentially a third. With this, it felt like some of the like trials were like, you know, if almost over immediately, like there was like three dudes. And I was just like, what was the point of that whole like that was a waste of time. And like as you're going around, there's like enemies that are not a part of the trials or whatever the heck you have to activate by, you know, activating a keyhole or whatever. They're just kind of like laying around. But it just felt like the pacing of that was all wrong. And it's like kind of contiguous, like, I don't know, like a long section with like other areas next to it. Like, I don't know. I felt like it was just worse. A theme here, which is like Hades, but worse.
Yeah. I mean, like Hades has like basically no like level navigation required. Like it's an arena. You fight in the arena and then you choose like A room or B room kind of a deal. It's
and you
very
can't
simplified.
Tell, and unlike Slay the Spire, you can't tell what's coming up ahead.
Right.
You just have the two paths.
There's like an interesting element here. I think like it's like I'll give developers like very minor bonus points for trying something different, even if it doesn't totally work. But like it is different that like you have these like random enemies kind of walking around that do you engage with them in combat? Do you avoid them because you're low on health? Like outside of like these very small combat arenas, but there's also like a minor amount of like dungeon crawling or maze navigation of like, okay, in order to clear this, I guess there's like, I don't know how you describe it, like three sectors or like three sections of a run where each section has 10 or I guess maybe it's like three or something fights that you have to do.
Right.
And in these, like there are like in these like sectors, it's kind of like a you know, random mishmash of prefabs. It almost kind of reminds me of Returnal in a way where it's like you got to go from point A to point B, but along the way you got to like unlock this thing and unlock that thing and then fight the boss at the end kind of deal. And like maybe your assignment is like, oh, I have to like I have to break the seal by going and interacting with this one security tower thing and going through some questionable dialogue. But then like that will like raise the bridge. But do you go and like get the next, like there's a risk reward element of like, do you go and get the next boon? Do you try to like stack up as many boons as you can while like, you know, leveraging your health kind of deal? I think an interesting idea. I don't know that it fully works with the scope of a run here. But Andrew, you've played a lot further. So like a typical run in this game, like you go through sector, let's call it sector A, which is like you need one what is it, one seal to break in order to raise the bridge, and then you go into your little rest zone, and then you have like, you know, your free health, you can interact with the rat children, you get it.
Yeah, that deserves being called out. Canonically, the reason that you resurrect at the beginning of each round is because little diesel punk street urchins have collected your unconscious body and dragged it back to the base camp.
If this is the kind of shoddy operation the queen's running, she deserves to be overthrown.
Right.
Like, you gotta get that coup de grace.
No. Yeah,
ring that bell, double tap.
You're
cleft her in twain.
The map layout. So this game is more of a dungeon crawl because there is a little bit of thought that you have to put into which fights you're going to take and whether it's worth the risk of, like, you know, absolutely exploring the entire map or not. And that is interesting, and I don't know. I feel like if I was were the developers, it feels almost like the decision to make the dungeon more open than Hades and not just arena fight after arena fight was to just give it something to differentiate the gameplay from Hades. It's cool. It's neat that you can explore the whole dungeon level and kind of pick which fights you want to take when. But I don't know. I don't think it was worth it. I think they probably should have just, you know, copied the arena bespoke isolated arena system of Hades, probably.
Or go like full rogue and like actually have a huge like area where you're exploring and you have to find the exit, and it's just like a big unknown about which way you have to go. But I feel like that doesn't really lend well to this style, this isometric kind of battle style.
Interesting.
I don't know though. I've never played a game like that, so maybe that, like, I mean, Diablo, I guess. That's sure. That's actually, you know what? There you go. That's exactly a direction to
or,
go with.
Or you get, what's the game where you got yeeted out into space?
Void Bastards?
No, the one that wasn't Void Bastards. That was Heat Signature. There you go.
Okay.
Heat Signature kind of, so what, the later levels of Heat Signature, once the ships got really big, a huge part of the game was like figuring out your path from the start to the objective. You could have something like that where, like, if you don't want it to be an exploration thing, it could be you're looking at the map and you're trying to figure out, like, okay, here I want to go here, then here, then here, then here, because I can get these things and I want to, like, a bloodletter build or whatever. And like, that's a shorter path, and then something, something, like, there's things on the map. You could have that. This is pretty linear, like, it's basically a line with one or two branches off the side for like one room.
Mm-hmm.
So the only choices are, do you do all of the lockdowns or not?
Which, honestly, just like, I didn't know how to pronounce the character's name. I didn't know that, like, those lockdowns were optional. I thought you had to do all three every time. It's neat, and I admire that they did that, but I don't know if it was worth the effort. I hope it didn't,
like, this would have been fine.
Don't you admire, though? That's the thing here. What I mean, I feel like if you're gonna say you admire everything, I need to know what's
okay. We're doing enough heavy lifting here for Andrew's sake.
Again, yeah, I feel like 8 save files, ridiculous. Length of the game, ridiculous. The fact that, like, it reuses the bosses is kind of annoying. Like, there's, at a certain point, it's like, instead of making a new bespoke boss, it's just like, now it's two bosses at the same time. It's like, oh man, at times
the third
it definitely
boss
feels
is
like
the first
they
two
are,
bosses.
Right. Yeah. It feels like they're kind of stretching it out. And again, I understand that it seems like it was, you know, due to some design hell trouble, but what is,
I mean,
pretty unforgivable.
Solo dev. So what have we, I mean, only so much you can do.
A mere 50 developers. Which I'm inclined to think that, well, you know, if you average out like how long they were all employed, it's probably less.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I
here's
mean,
the biggest problem.
Just a number. It could
I'm glad you've brought this up, Will. But yeah, I definitely, as the one person who seems to like this game the most, the person who likes the game most on this podcast, I definitely have some pretty significant gripes. But the biggest one that is tough to excuse is the fact that when I was doing the final boss battle, now disclaimer, there could be some post game super duper boss battle that I don't know about, but when I was doing the core storyline final boss battle, I did not know I was in the final boss battle. And when I, like, quote unquote beat the game, like, that's the one of the worst feelings you can have.
Wait,
in a
all
game.
Right. All right, so spoiler alert, spoilers if you're listening. Wait, is the last boss not just the queen?
It's Zagreus from Hades.
So check it out. So you fight the queen, you defeat the queen, and then you do a sixth and like final run or whatever, or you do a sixth run, I think, and you basically just fight her again. It's more or less the same fight with like a few different moves that are different. But I thought, okay, cool, I'm gonna like fight her. You do the same fight that is a little bit different in that there are more phases, but the phases kind of look the same, and like she has a few extra attacks. I thought for sure I was going to then go into another arena with you know, her uber form
rule
with,
of,
like,
threes.
So yeah. Indeed, the
right
rule of
fighting
three.
Her
and
once, fine.
No.
Fighting her three times, also fine. Twain, but, Twain times,
Twain times is simply not how we do things here. So that was unfortunate. I have not gotten another win since then, so I can't say for sure that there's not.
What's the story? Do you
but
ever
I mean,
find
like,
out?
I did get the credit crawl after that.
Do you
I mean,
ever
the story
get...
is pretty simple. It's like, hey, you beat the queen, and
no,
like,
but
her...
like, why are you rebelling?
Democracy reigns after that, right?
She's trying to brainwash the masses. All right, cool. Wow. But like, what is she trying to brainwash them to?
into. Yeah, there it is not elaborated on.
Is she trying to brainwash them all into being like kind and compassionate people? it's never explicitly stated what she's trying to do.
Clef is labeled the antagonist.
Yo,
not the protagonist.
Are we the baddies type situation?
So yeah, I think we are the baddies.
She's an anarcho-capitalist trying to overthrow the social democratic government.
Well, and we salute her for it. I refuse to believe that such a beautiful, such a glorious main character could be evil in any way. I shan't hear of it. So again, I assume that there was some grand storyline that they didn't have time to implement because it is pretty basic. And I mean, you know, the gameplay for $10, for my money, for $10, the gameplay is like good enough for the storyline to be like, hey, this is like, you know, the service, it's serviceable, it's fine, it's very, you know, basic, but it's like good enough. Unfortunately, this game was like never going to compete in terms of like story and characters, compete against Hades.
Can we all talk about the very biggest gripe here? This is my last. Actually, we've checked out everything on my list.
I have
actually
one
very
more
proud
gripe
of you all. You all have identified every gripe I have except for this one, which is that Locke Bell Pets is like 999 times worse than Cerberus in Hades. I mean, it's just like, oh, good job, little lock thing. It's just like, what the fuck are you? I don't give a shit.
It should
Cerberus
be a, it should a be dog with a robot leg, obviously.
So yeah, back at the base, which remains pretty unchanged throughout the game. There's not really any development of the base that you visit in between runs. There's a little pet, which is a tiny bell. Instead of an enemy bell, it's a tiny bell.
Aww.
That is friendly, and you can pet the bell. I thought perhaps the dialogue or the interaction would like change over the course of the game. It doesn't.
Nope.
But real quick, I do want to mention that the bosses or the enemy characters, the villains that you talk to, their dialogue does evolve over the course of the game, which I appreciate. And by the end of the game, the spear sister that everyone's been roasting the voice acting work of, she like comes around and realizes like, oh no, I was blinded. You're right, Clef. You know, I can't believe, you know, I'd been, you know, serving this horrible queen, blah, blah, blah.
Oh no, I was blinded. Like, you're right, Clef.
I think you're mistaking this character is a stoic soldier doing their duty. And I think the performance is fantastic. I'm standing it out.
I was trying to find out more information about the studio, and I was reading this Reddit thread, and that someone roasts it in the most appropriate way, which is, we don't need Hades. We have Hades at home.
Rude.
We did. You did miss one gripe, Will. When you defeat a lockdown, and you get the choice of three different upgrades, there is no way to look at the upgrades that you currently have. So if you're like, wait, do I have a bleed build going? I can't remember if I do. I have one or two. Is it worth investing in this more? Be like, wish I could figure that out. Can't. You can click select or whatever in the normal screen to see what your build is, but not during the upgrade select.
I feel like I would have noticed this if I played for more than like a couple hours, or maybe even just an hour, because the repetition just like bored me immediately, and so, but that does seem like a really negative attribute here.
Well, you played it longer than 25% of the people that have played it at the very least.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the Hades at home thing hits especially hard because like Hades 2 is just like almost the exact same like theme as this, but just like, you know, the super giant level of like female led cast.
Wait, but is it a muscle mummy? Let me see. I don't remember.
She's not a muscle mummy. Oh,
no, there are some muscle mummies in Hades 2 camp for sure.
Sure, but main character isn't.
No.
She's a magic mummy.
Yeah.
Okay, let's I feel like we've overused this term mommy.
I think she's more of a muscle mommy light.
Yeah, there you go.
Good. Okay.
But I also think that like for how much we've been roasting the voice acting in this game, I think there is one game that's like it's very highly regarded, and I was playing through it and I'm like, okay, why are people liking this game so much more? Like, why is this game so much more popular? It's a game called Death Must Die, and it's a survivor like. It's very much in the vein of like Halls of Torment, very very Diablo looking graphics. And you have like your very Hades style like gods that come in off of the side of the screen and say like, "Hey, I'm the goddess of fire, and I'm so hot." Like, I think like the voice acting in Death Must Die is much worse than this game, because like at the very least, I feel like the main character is like doing is like a fine job. It's not very inspired, but it's okay. And like, the one person that I think got the assignment was the Queen of Keys in this game, because the voice actor for that character is very mustache twirly, is chewing the scenery. Oh, like you blow up some of the enemies, and then like they'll come over like the very Hades style system of just like, voiceovering, "Oh no, my pretties!" And it just like, I'm just like, yeah, I want more of that kind of like laughable, over the top nonsense. And it's a shame that like, I feel like only one of the voice actors like either got what the intent was, or just maybe like accidentally put on like a performance, whereas all of the rest of the enemy, I don't know, like people that you interact with in Rainbreaker are very much just kind of reading off a script, like not vibing with the other person. And yeah, so Death Must Die, I think, much worse. Apparently, like, I had read some comments online that the Andrew, I don't know if you've played the game Sworn, Sworn. I think it's like
I'm
a,
afraid I have not.
I think it's a roguey first person shooter. I don't know. Like, it's another game with like voice acting. People said the voice acting in that one was pretty off-putting, but the action was quite good. And then, of course, I posted in our Discord the intro to a indescribable like PlayStation 1 aesthetic game called Dungeons of Blood and Dream, which the intro to that, I'm debating if I should like inject that post in here, but like the intro to that is like some N64 looking Andross monkey that is just like it's obviously bad, but it's entertainingly bad. And
Sure.
they're just like, "Blood wizard, your evil magics must be imprisoned." And I'm just like, yep, all right, I'm on board for at least 20 minutes of playing this, because it's like, it's some kind of flavor. It's like,
It's
it's something.
Diablo.
Yeah.
Bones and blood while I crush. Yeah, it's all it's a distraction.
Arrogant Nephilim.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter that you've defeated all of my minions, because now I will crush you.
Sure. Yeah. This game, Rainbreaker, definitely is not in the so bad it's good category, which definitely, is a phenomenon that exists in films. It's less
It's
common
harder to
being
do in
found in video
games.
games. Yeah, for sure.
MST3K, I mean, obviously it highlights the U-shaped curve of the like bad, like greats bad, and then so bad is great. I
I
mean,
don't think it's really hard to have a so bad it's great game. I feel like even then, because usually so bad means that like the gameplay doesn't work well, like the controls are bad and then it's frustrating. So
Yeah, is there
it's
one? Can you think of
you
one?
get
Oh,
the
well,
very very bad
I have one for
graphics,
you. It's
like the
not,
crab, what
it's
is it, the crab battle game, the Undersea Lobster one,
there's like a Monkey Madness game I
Fight
remember playing.
Crab.
Yeah.
There's games that are like aesthetically weird, like Fight Crab,
Goat
or
Simulator.
I mean Goat Simulator, sure. Give oh God, now I'm spacing on it. Cruelty Squad a quick Google search
Is that the
here.
one that's like hurts? It makes your eyes bleed?
It is like actual visual, not like nauseating vomit on the
Yeah.
screen.
You've told me about this one before.
Yeah,
It's.
it is not a roguelike, but it is like the closest that I can think of a so bad it's good, because like, I mean, Andrew, for your perspective, it is a first person shooter,
Oh,
and
I'm
you
well aware of it, but
and
unfortunately, it's too. It upsets my stomach.
But Will might be interested, because there you can set up your own organ harvesting market economy.
Before you even said organ harvesting, that was the phrase that my mind conjured there. That's incredible that you like. Amazing that you know me so well. Organ harvesting is a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, like, unfortunately for me, I think it feels like we're transitioning into rankings here a little bit, but I feel like Rainbreaker is just kind of like, it's like sitting in that like bottom part of the curve of like, it's just boring, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like it's repetitive. Like there's good ideas here that just didn't have time to bake. And it's unfortunately not as like campy or scenery chewing, as much as I would want. But yeah, I guess do we have any last maybe I have one last point here before we transition to rankings. I don't know if anyone else has any other stuff. One last thing I wanted to call out was like, so, you know, the average play time of this game is pretty short, and it's like 3 or 4 hours or something. So I was like, well, what are some other rogue games that are like very short, but like of good quality? Because it seems like a very like weird thing of like, this specific kind of game lends itself very easily to long play times. But like, I believe there is a game, I don't know if this is how roguey this is, but it did show up on the database, called Cat Bait, which has an average play time of 5 hours. Andrew, I think you've played Super Amazing Wagon Adventure before.
Yes, indeed.
Like 3.5 hours. It's a game called The Great Rebellion, 4 hours. One that's very interesting, Andrew, you might also be interested, a detective noir dice rolling pizza delivery game called Betrayal at Club Low, just about under 4 hours of gameplay. And one that's come out, I think, relatively recently that looks very cute is Cozy Space Survivors, that has an average playtime of like 3 hours. These are all like very like pretty well regarded, like interesting and like wacky different games that I think like would definitely kind of like hit that sweet spot that like, and I'm sure that like when they were developing this game, I don't think they were developing it with the intent of like, people are only going to play this game for 3 hours and enjoy it. But, you know, it is a possible thing to do with a small budget and limited time frame and still be successful at it, I think.
Definitely recommend Super Wagon Adventure, which is a good example of a game that is like intentionally ridiculous. It's campy. And, you know, it's bad in a very entertaining way, an outrageous way. So, yeah, it's unfortunately, I've thought about picking it, but it's just too short. There's not enough to talk about, sadly. A live stream in the future, perhaps.
Rankings.
All right. Ranking. Yeah. Rock and roll. Well, obviously, I should go first because clearly I was the most critical of this game. No, who's starting us off?
Let's have Will punt us off here.
So you pulled up the Grog Pod ratings. You're like, who rated this lowest? Oh, Will, let's pick him first. We can't have Andrew go first because he has the highest. You know what? Fine. You know what?
I mean, I feel like this is the system we have settled upon.
All right. I disagree with it wholeheartedly, but yeah, you know, this is a 5 out of 10 game. It does not pass the recommend threshold of 6, and I've already stated my gripes. I had like a 10-point list, and yeah, it's just the Hades you had at home, and there's not much more to say. It's not. Don't play this game.
I guess in shocking fashion, I will go next. Rainbreaker, for me, I'm giving it a 5.8, just ahead of Dungeons of Dreadmore and just behind Rogue Tower. I think there's stuff to like here in theory, that I think that like the art design for this game is very strong, has a very good aesthetic to it. The music, I think, is great, even though the combat does get a little repetitive. The combat theme, I think, like the combat flow itself is like reasonably fun and engaging, and there's some neat like aspects to it that are kind of unique. I just sort of wish that there was more time for the studio to kind of capitalize on it. So it's a little unfortunate that it didn't really have time to kind of come to fruition. And in standard Paul Hollywood fashion, it's underbaked. I think the bads here kind of outweigh the goods, unfortunately. I think, like, again, art is in the eye of the beholder. I think the voice acting in this game is generally bad. Your main player character is okay, but like all of the enemy people that you interact with are just super wooden, and like their delivery is not good, except for the queen, who I think is like the only good voice acting in the game by a wide margin. The lack of diversity in the games like Biome and I guess like the weapon stuff is like diverse enough, but I don't know, it just doesn't feel like there's enough like ways to like mix up the combat. So I mean the biome diversity itself is kind of like the last nail in the coffin, but yeah, I think generally like if this studio had more time to bake on this concept, maybe they could have turned it into something that is a little more like unique and standy outy compared to some of the other like numerous Hades likes out on the market. I think the punk aesthetic is an underexplored one for this, and it would be cool, but it just needs more time.
I'll go next. I give it a 6.6. I mean, despite kind of shitting on it for most of the podcast, I do think that there was a lot. It feels like a decently good game that just didn't get finished. It feels like an early access game. But like, there are parts of it that are fun. Like, the early game is not very fun. The last run I did, like, right before this, I had more fun than any of the other runs. I think the systems have a rough time when they're getting online, and some of the fun is locked behind the repetitive, very, very early game. But then it, you know, your fun of increasing complexity of systems is counteracted by the realization that you have one biome and it's going to kind of stay repetitive. So like you can have a decently good time for, I don't know, maybe like 5 to 10 hours, and then say, cool, I'm finished with this game. If you really like Hades and you want more of the gameplay type of action and don't really care that much about the story, this might be fun for you. And it's only $10, so it's not that doesn't hurt the pocket that much. So, Andrew?
Hey, so Rain Breaker. Thank goodness it's not called Windbreaker. Thank goodness it's not called Risk of Rainbreaker. This game had a lot of promise, and it's a bit of a development tragedy, in my opinion. The best marker of quality, I think, that can be said from my personal experience for this game is that when I did finish the main game, I was disappointed that there wasn't more core main storyline for me to digest, more content for me to go after. There's like, you know, some unlocks and things, and I will probably, you know, throw a few more runs into it to see like what the end game is, if there is such a thing. Yeah, anytime, you know, you finish a game and you immediately want to play more of it, that is a good sign. So if you listen to this podcast and you find that your game tastes are in alignment with me, then perhaps check this game out. As Colin said, it's only $10. Rainbreaker, we hardly knew ye, and unfortunately we won't get to see much more of you since the development has been discontinued. Development and support is more or less gone. I look forward to, you know, whatever, playing the games from the devs who worked on this game. And I hope that they all land in a good place, and it's pretty lousy and especially ironic that a game with this theme was being made, and that the developers met a fate which is, you know, thematically similar. So it's too bad. It's too bad. I have awarded this game, what did I give it? Again, my rankings are all screwed up. It has scored 6.85 points on my scale, which puts it at number 21, right behind Dead Cells and right ahead of Rift Wizard. My new number 21, Rainbreaker. See you in the Omega Bowl. Oh no, wait, we probably won't.
Well, yeah, because you know, if Hades 2 comes out of early access later this year, I'm sure that one will jump up to our priority queue. But yeah, I think we kind of touched on some similar games earlier. I mean, obviously Hades. We've talked probably more about Hades this episode than we have Rainbreaker. But some other Hades likes of note that are of pretty decently good quality, some like involving very interesting elements of co-op. Raven's Watch, I think people make note of as like, ooh, this is a good game to play co-op. Curse of the Dead Gods, I've heard is supposed to be another halfway decent Hades-like. We talked a little bit about Warm Snow, the Chinese mythology Hades-like. I'm gonna put Redacted in here as well as a Hades-like, sort of on the opposite end of the spectrum of the oppressometer, but re reasonably fun and interesting aesthetic. There's Ragnar, which is like, hey, what if Hades, but instead of Greek mythology, it was Norwegian mythology? We talked about Echoes of Mistralia a little bit ago, and then I think finally Rogue Loops is one that people have been making some steam about. But yeah, we'll have to keep our finger on the pulse of those. It seems interesting that we haven't like played more Hades likes, considering how like Hades is what our new is our number two overall game of the pod. But maybe in due time we'll have to. I guess we'll have to see if Hades 2 comes up to snuff, but. That's going to wind down our episode here on Rainbreaker. I kept wanting to think like the
That's a James
Moonraker
Bond. Yeah. Okay.
yeah, the whole time. But yeah, write in our email, grogpodzone@gmail.com, our Mastodon, grogpod@gamedev.place. Screenshots and all sorts of wacky stuff there. Grogpod.zone is where we have all the rankings and other stuff. It's your one-stop shop, that kind of deal. Our next episode coming up here is our listener request week episode, which this one has been requested for a long time and often. So it's only been a matter of time before we eventually slotted this one into the schedule. We are talking the solo dev effort, a game that we covered for our last year's summer Grogpod Summer Music Fest. We are talking one Path of Acre, the traditional roguelike that I think solves a lot of potential issues that we've had with traditional roguelikes in the past. Yeah, I think some neat, interesting twists. And Will, for your benefit, there is an ape class that you can pick
Thank God.
to pummel all of your enemies. So if there was ever a game that you needed to pick an ape, a blood mage ape, to pummel your enemies with, have I got the game in store for you? But I think that's gonna wind down our show here as everyone as I can just look in the Zoom window here and I can see everyone Googling Path
I
of
am
Acre and just
right
being
now.
like, okay.
Yeah.
And
Overwhelmingly positive. Okay,
gritting their
yeah,
teeth.
maybe.
But yeah, so that's gonna end our Rainbreaker episode. And to play us out here are some punk tunes to jam out and overthrow and to fight the oligarchy with from Jerv.
Whispers grow into desperate cries. What fun!